Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. 2.4 million workers in the U.S. applied for unemployment last week, according to the new numbers. This brings the total number of people who have lost their jobs to 39 million. Millions more have had their wages or hours reduced. Half of U.S. households say they have had a pay cut. The majority of those who've lost their jobs are women and people of color. 40% are people who earn less than $40,000 a year. Joining us to talk about the state of the economy and the systemic changes needed to address growing inequality and the long-lasting effects of the COVID-19 pandemic is Robert Reich, professor of public policy at UC Berkeley. Professor Reich served in three administrations, most recently as Secretary of Labor under the Clinton administration. He is the author of 12 books, including his latest, The System, Who Rigged It, How We Fix It. Professor Rice says America's billionaires grew their wealth by $308 billion between March 18th and April 22nd. Meantime, 39 million people are out of work and are struggling to pay the bills. He says this is a tale of two pandemics. Hi, Professor Rice. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Rose.
Good morning. So we have new numbers out, Professor Rice. These are huge numbers. 39 million people have lost their jobs. And I think it is so important to just constantly repeat that 40% of those people earn less than $40,000 a year.
Yes, this is not an equal effect in terms of this pandemic. I think there was a time in March where a lot of people, a lot of commentators were saying that the pandemic was hitting everyone. And it is true that everyone is potentially at risk in this pandemic. But in terms of its actual practical effect with regard to the disease and life and also employment, well, it's not an equal opportunity pandemic. It is really hitting the poor. It is hitting people of color. It is hitting many, many women much more and to a much larger extent than it is hitting anybody else.
Right. And it's hitting them economically. It's also hitting them when it comes to those who are getting sick and those who are tragically passing away. Professor Reich, you put together a video that I saw on social media about how this is disproportionately affecting Native Americans. And I have to say, Professor Reich, thank you for including Native Americans, because Natives are left out when it comes to these kinds of conversations. African Americans, Latinos, Latinas, they're dying at a much higher rate than everyone else.
They're dying. They're becoming diseased at a higher rate. Now, the Centers for Disease Control is not keeping very accurate records of race or ethnicity. But on the basis of what we can learn about individual places and cities and states that do report these things, there is no question that people of color and Native Americans are being impacted to a much greater extent. And the number of cases, the number of deaths is, well, it's just awful by any stretch of the imagination. America right now, we've got 93,000. I mean, I never thought I would be saying anything like this, mm-hmm. Rose. 93,000 people have died over the last 11 weeks in the United States. And they are disproportionately poor and people of color. Many of them are women. That is, a majority of them are women. But, you know, everybody is being affected to some extent. This is a national calamity.
Just according to the latest numbers from Johns Hopkins, Professor Reich, I'm waiting for the site to come up. But as you said, we've got now more than 92,000 deaths, actually 93. Yesterday, we just passed 92. Now we're at 93,606. Professor Reich, yesterday's guest, Dr. Dina Grayson, said the numbers are probably much, much higher. And then in the United States, in terms of cases, 1.5 million positive cases. I wonder, Professor Reich, since you have worked under three administrations, what are your thoughts just about how the federal government is dealing with this or is not dealing with this? So many new studies are coming out. One that's so important talks about the lives that could have been saved if we just went you know, practice social distancing a week before, let's say California, because we did it first?
Well, the real tragedy here, Rose, is that there's very, very little debate about how late the United States was in responding, how haphazard we have been in responding. We really are only partially opening. We are we're kind of social distancing. Most Americans are trying to shelter in place, but many are not any longer. The states have every state has different rules in terms of reopening. And right now we have every state has reopened to some extent, but with completely different standards, completely different criteria. And this kind of mirrors the kind of chaos that has come out of Washington in every respect, not only the Centers for Disease Control and the criteria being used, but also personal protective equipment and how the Trump administration has or has not distributed anything to anybody, telling the states they have to compete against each other to get the right equipment, and now telling the states there will not be any more revenue for the states at a time when the states are all facing huge revenue shortfalls, given the taxes have fallen off a cliff and given that states cannot, by their state constitutions, run deficits. I mean, this is tragically, sadly, when the history of this is written, government will be implicated. The failure of government, particularly relative to other governments around the country, like Germany or South Korea or other places where you have a very, very much, much lower rate of death, a much, much better and more rapid response to this crisis.
How do you see this playing out, Professor Reich? Because as states reopen, a lot of workers are afraid to go back to work. One of our interns actually works for a delivery service. He said he is afraid every single day, but he has to pay his rent, so he has no choice but to work. Some businesses are opening, but it's a trickle. A lot of businesses have already shut down. So what are your thoughts about, you know, where we're going this year and next?
Well, this really isn't a matter of, you know, the Trump administration talks about freedom. And we hear on Fox News a lot of references to freedom to work. But this is not about freedom. I mean, freedom is meaningless in a situation where people have really no choice. I mean, the emergency relief and expanded benefits that Congress approved in late March, they certainly have helped. But nearly half of the states have not yet provided the additional 13 weeks of unemployment insurance that the federal government promised to those who had exhausted their state benefits. And states are also denying benefits to anyone whose company has called them back. And we just heard yesterday that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell insists that the expanded benefits will not be included in the next coronavirus relief package. So workers really don't have much choice. They really do have to, many of them, return to work, even though they don't want to. And here's the sad thing, is that the death rates and the rates of disease seem to be turning upward where we have opened. That is, 2 weeks after Texas Governor Greg Abbott began reopening the Texas economy, it experienced the highest single highest rise in cases since the beginning of the pandemic. I mean, even in places that have done it right, like Germany, the most successful large European country to halt the spread of the virus, thanks to a very massive testing program, the disease, as Germany starts reopening, is showing signs of spreading faster. So it's no wonder that in the United States you've got a lot of experts who are saying that reopenings are going to cause thousands of additional deaths. And yet Americans really have got to go back to work. This is not freedom. This is a matter of necessity.
We should also mention undocumented immigrants, Professor Reich, and migrants, because we have seen major breakouts and death, sadly, at meat processing plants. In some cases, they still do not have PPE. I just got an email today about what's happening in Florida with the farm workers and the Immokalee workers there. Here in California, undocumented immigrants were finally available, finally asked to there's $500 per person, which is not much given that it's May. And Professor Rice, not surprising, the system has been completely just overloaded, just like the employment offices across the country.
Yeah, totally overloaded. You talk about migrant workers, migrant farm workers. There are also other groups that are almost invisible normally, and they are invisible now. But look at prisoners. I mean, the number of people who are even in pretrial detention who are risking their lives because they are in close quarters, and these prisons are becoming hotspots for the virus. Or look at the people who are detained at the border, migrants who are seeking refugee status. They are also being detained. They are also in hotspots. We mentioned before Native Americans. The Navajo Nation is experiencing rates of the disease and death that rival many, many states just in one particular Navajo nation, just a reservation. There are other invisible people. You mentioned warehouse workers, meat packers. A lot of these people are people of color. They are people who don't get very much attention. They are not organized as labor. They don't have union protection. Obviously, also we have hospital workers. Still, to this day, we've got hospital workers who are not getting the personal protective equipment they need. I know in my family, I've got a brother-in-law and a sister-in-law who are both nurses, and they tell me every day, where is the personal protective equipment? There's a kind of inhumanity about this pandemic that points up in stark relief the inequalities and injustices that were already there in America. I mean, we just didn't pay much attention to them. Even now, we're not paying much attention to them, but they are there for all to see very, very vividly.
Today, we're speaking with Professor Robert Reich, professor of public policy at UC Berkeley. He served under three administrations, including Secretary of Labor under the Clinton administration. His latest book is The System, Who Rigged It, How We Fix It. If you have a question or comment for Professor Reich, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. What systemic changes would you like to see to address growing inequality and the long-lasting impacts that we are going to feel because of the COVID-19 pandemic? Professor Reich, a lot of people are saying we cannot go back to normal. We have to implement systemic changes. Right now, we've got a lot of workers who are striking, whether it's sometimes it's in their cars, but a lot of movements are happening across the country. What are your thoughts, Professor Reich, about using this time, especially we have an election that's less than 6 months away, to really demand these major changes?
Well, I think it is certainly an occasion for people across the country, workers and people who care about average working people and people who are poor and the working poor to get even more active and more vocal. But here's the problem, Rose. Number one, we're most of us not seeing each other. I mean, it's very hard to demonstrate when we're sheltering in place or even when we are under the roof of an employer who is demanding that we get back to work. It's also very difficult when so many workers are either unemployed or running out of money for one reason or another. It's a lot to ask people at this time of crisis to be politically and socially active, to strike or to demand their rights. But having said that, let me also add that we are seeing an uptick in worker organization. I talked just a couple of weeks ago to a bunch of Amazon workers who they were white collar workers, corporate workers, but they were striking and they were being kind of active. They had a rally to support the warehouse workers, the blue-collar workers at Amazon, and they were outraged that they were part of a company, Amazon, one of the richest companies in this country, that was treating its warehouse workers so badly, taking their safety really for granted, not providing the kind of social distancing and masks and other personal protective equipment that workers need, and certainly not providing the paid sick leave that people need. So we are seeing people who are standing up, not only for themselves, but for others. And maybe we'll see more of that. I certainly hope we do.
We have a tweet from End Child Poverty. It's an organization in California that works to end deep child poverty for 450,000 children in this state. And they write, racial and economic inequality was glaring before, but the pandemic is making those disparities crystal clear. We can build back better. No return to the status quo. Thank you so much for that tweet. Our Twitter handle is at Your Call Radio. You can also give us a call, 866-798-8255, or you can email yourcall@kalw.org. Professor Rice, it's important to talk about the fact that we did not get here overnight. I mean, this has been decades in the making, and now we are seeing the end result. And there are so many layers to this, whether it's about how the tax code has changed, how income is distributed, how CEO pay is just off the charts as worker pay has remained low, especially for the lowest workers. You've been around for a while working on these issues, Professor Reich. Can you just talk about, you know, how this is a 30, 40-year plan and the response to it? We cannot wait another 30 to 40 years to turn this around.
No, it has been. If you look at stagnant wages in terms of the typical worker in the United States, by the beginning of this year, even when the economy looked like it was pretty good in terms of low unemployment, the fact of the matter is that the wage of the typical worker right in the middle of the wage spectrum had not increased, adjusted for inflation, in almost 40 years. That worker, in terms of real purchasing power, was earning about the same as that worker was earning, or the similar worker was earning in 1979. Yes, these problems have been growing, and the problems of racism and misogyny and genderism, yes, we certainly have them. Women paid less than men for comparable work. We have seen more and more of the nation's wealth and the benefits of economic growth go to the top 20%, and larger portion go to the top 1%. And that's been the story for much of the last 40 years. There has not been a major movement, Rose, to change this direction. If anything, sadly, you have more and more political power at the top, because obviously with wealth comes power, because some of that wealth has been used to finance elections and in both political parties. And I think I don't want to be accused of false equivalence here, because most of it really is the Republicans. But there are corporate Democrats, Wall Street Democrats who have prevented or stopped or blocked even the Democratic Party and Democratic presidents and Democratic Congresses from dealing with the problems, the underlying structural problems of this economy, to the extent that they should be dealt with. And maybe, I mean, if I really do put on my silver cloud, silver lining to this terrible cloud, a hat, and I try to say to myself, well, what's the best that can come out of this? This awful period of time, pandemic and near Great Depression levels of unemployment and neediness, maybe what can come out of it is a different attitude toward such things as universal basic income, which now I think people understand the need for at least a subsistence income, because anybody can lose in a situation like this their jobs. As you said, starting this program, that half of Americans right now, half American adults know somebody or have somebody in their family who's lost a job. Half of families have lost income. I mean, this is not just a small percentage of America. This is half of America. The same thing with health care. Right now, the estimates are that you've got at least 6 million, probably closer to 10 million Americans who have lost their employer-provided health care. So that, you know, months ago, before all of this, Medicare for All was sort of an abstraction. It sounded good to some people. It sounded scary to others. But now that people have a direct experience of the loss of employer-provided health care, it may be possible when the clouds part and we are over this to demand and have a lot of people demanding together that we have universal health care. And everything else we've been talking about, I think most fundamentally, people are going to understand the need for government, for a competent government. I mean, you know, for the last 40 years, since Ronald Reagan was president, we've had a lot of people in this country think government is the problem. That's what Reagan said. But now we're living through a time where we can see what happens when you don't have a government. When you don't have a federal government that is competent and able to do what federal governments must do in crises of this proportion.
To your point about healthcare, Professor Reich, this is a very sad thought, but I saw an article about the 93,000 people who have died from COVID. The people who died who had healthcare, now their families don't have healthcare. So the ripple effect is just going to be much bigger than the numbers that we have today.
And the families don't have healthcare, presumably for a number of reasons. One, because those people who died either had a job and employer-provided healthcare, which covered their families, or they had at least temporary healthcare provided by the government, but many of those families no longer qualify. It's a chaotic system, Rose. I think everybody is now beginning to understand that the haphazard way we provide our safety nets, the kind of safety nets that are filled with holes that are and for years have been unraveling. And now people see it. They experience it. Unemployment, you know, Congress at the end of March did increase unemployment benefits by $600 a week for most people. But those unemployment offices in many states have been overwhelmed. They can't get the benefits out the door. And just yesterday, Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, said they're going to end. He's not going to support any additional unemployment benefits. And so, you know, here we have the worst of all worlds. We've got the pandemic. We've got at least 38 million, probably closer to 45 million people unemployed. I wouldn't be surprised if the next jobs report showed us between 20 and 25% unemployment, which is really Great Depression levels of unemployment. And we've got the majority leader of the Senate saying, no, we're not going to even provide extra unemployment benefits to people. And we don't have even to begin with a safety net that covers nearly what people need right now. And we have the highest death rate in the world among advanced nations. I mean, if this is not enough to stir some sort of social outrage and movement, I don't know what would be.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today we're speaking with Robert Reich, professor of public policy at UC Berkeley. He served as Secretary of Labor under the Clinton administration. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
I'm Ben Trefney, KLW News Director, really appreciating this conversation from these Bay Area treasures, Rose Aguilar and Robert Reich. Really appreciate hearing your call, and I hope that you will help make this program possible by calling 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917. This is the last day of our membership drive. We started the day with 425 calls or clicks to go, or that equivalent of dollars at about $100 per person, and we are down to 245. We can end this drive. We were hoping to end it early. We're planning on going all day, but if you can come through, We need you to pick up the phone right now and call 800-525-9917 or go to kalw.org to support your call and KALW.
This is the last day of our membership drive. Thank you so much for all of your support. I have a number of people to thank. Robert, Kyla, Gregory, and Ian in San Francisco, Jackie in Oakland, Jerry and Tony in San Jose, Stephen in Napa, Brenda in Vallejo, and Richard in Piedmont, all over the North Bay and the Bay Area. Thank you so much for calling and clicking 800-525-9917. 800-525-9917 or online at kalw.org. Support these very important conversations that we have on a regular basis here, talking about the systemic changes that we need to address all sorts of issues, whether it's inequality, low wages. There's just so many there. And luckily, we still have an hour to do this. It's pretty uncommon these days to spend an hour on one topic, but we are dedicated to that kind of media and kind of information. And it really does connect the community, because after this break, we have a lot of calls and emails coming in. So that's what you're supporting. 800-525-9917 or online kalw.org.
Just like you heard from Rose there, we value your voice here at KALW. We bring you the people who are really analyzing these situations deeply. We've been hearing about issues with healthcare, with pharmaceuticals. We're hearing about issues with economics. We are bringing the experts in to talk with you, and we're giving you the chance to talk with them too. This is the station that makes that possible. We're part of your community, and we are here to serve you, but we cannot do it without your support. 800-525-9917. If you've never become a member, now is such a good time. It's the end of our membership drive. Call 800-525-9917 or go online to kalw.org. It's really going to take you about 2 minutes to do. It's going to make you feel good all day long and really all year long, because when you listen to KALW, you know you're a supporter and you're making the Bay Area better. Please go to kalw.org and help us end this drive.
And to be really connected to KALW, it'd be great if you became a sustaining member, $5, $10, $20 a month, whatever works for you. 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917. I just got an update, Ben. We now have 240 calls or clicks to go, or $25,000.
All right, that's great. So if you can become a member right now, remember, this is the last day of the membership drive, and we're going to go right back to that conversation on your call after I finish telling you the number again, 800-525-9917. Will you be the next person to stand up for independent public radio? I know that you can, and we can do this together. Also, if you're in a position where you could give a leadership gift of $1,000 or $3,000 or $5,000, maybe $10,000, Rose just said we have about $25,000 to go to end this drive. If you appreciate what you've been hearing and you know that it's helping make the world a better place, then please contribute to KALW, kalw.org. Thanks so much for listening, and let's go back to this Your Call conversation.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and today we're joined by Robert Reich, professor of public policy at UC Berkeley. He's the author of 12 books, including his latest, The System, Who Rigged It, How We Fix It. Today we're talking about the systemic changes needed to address crucial issues like growing inequality and the long-lasting effects of COVID-19. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can email yourcall at kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Let's go to a few callers who have been waiting patiently. Let's hear from Ruby in Mill Valley. Hi, Ruby. Nice to hear you. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much. Hi, good morning. Dr. Reich, we really revere and trust everything you tell us. We have for about 20 years now that you've been in public life, and thank you so much for all your work and your cogent way of getting it across to us. So my question is, I'm kind of sad to hear you just say, if this doesn't change our minds, what will? So that's kind of my question to you, is all of this horror that people who are depending upon their health care from their employment, when they don't have employment, what are they to do? Do you think this is not going to change at all until the administration changes?
will change until the administration changes. I think and I'm going to be very candid with you, if Donald Trump is reelected and if the Republicans stay in charge of the Senate, then nothing is going to change. I mean, even if most people, in terms of polls and their own personal attitudes, do say we need to have some sort of national health care, we do need to have some sort of national unemployment system that makes sense, we need to have this or that, it really doesn't matter, because the Republican Party, to a greater extent than the Democratic Party, but as I said before, even the Democratic Party, to a disturbing extent, is under the sway of big business and Wall Street. But I think there is a chance if Joe Biden is, I'm assuming now he's the presumptive Democratic candidate for president, if he is elected on November 3rd, starting next year, it is possible, and certainly if the Senate also flips, we could get a massive wave of reform. Now, I don't want to make you overly encouraged, because reforms don't just happen, and they certainly don't happen with changes in leadership alone. They need changes in leadership, but they also need a public that is clamoring for reform, a public that is demanding and pushing for fundamental reform. And I think that's the real question as well.
Professor Reich, can you give us your honest assessment of a Joe Biden? Because it seems like he could go one of two ways. He can embrace the Goldman Sachs, you know, and do what Obama did in many ways by embracing Wall Street and stacking his administration with Wall Street. Or he can say, you know what, I'm probably not going to give Wall Street speeches after this, so I am going to do the right thing. I have heard him say he supports a $13 an hour wage increase for essential workers, which would basically double their income. He also said on day one, if he has the Senate and the House, a path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. So which way do you think he's going to go?
That's a great question, Rose. And if I knew him better personally, I might be able to give you an educated answer. But I can tell you from my years of being in Washington, serving several presidents, that if you've got a decent person who is president and who is intelligent and cogent and thoughtful and who cares, and I think that Joe Biden fits all of these descriptions, then if there is wind at their back, that is, if the public is demanding something, they will get in front of that parade. I don't know any presidents. I mean, I've worked for four, including one Republican president. No president that I know of actually leads a parade. That is, they will get in front of a parade that's already there. Even Franklin D. Roosevelt, when he was running for re-election in 1936, somebody said to him, so the story goes, Mr. President, if you're re-elected, you've got to do this and this and this and this. And he said, ma'am, I would like to do all of those, but I can only do them if, when I am elected or if I'm re-elected, you must make me. You must make me. And that's why I was saying to Ruby that it's not just leadership. It really is the degree to which the public is organized, mobilized, enraged. And I think that a common experience like this pandemic may be enough to get the public to demand a certain minimum things from its government, from Washington, but it may not happen immediately. I mean, I think the first wave might be a tendency if we get, you know, we don't know how long this is going to go on. We don't know if there's going to be another surge in the pandemic. We don't know how long unemployment is going to be very bad. But let's just assume that next year by this time, Joe Biden is in the White House and the worst is over. Well, some people may just want to go back to normal. They just may want to just, oh, my God, I just want my life to be like it was before. So it's impossible to tell.
Right. And if he has a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House, that's when people need to really, really push, because they can get a lot done if that's the case. We just did a show, Professor Reich, about what a post-COVID New Deal should look like. And Art just wrote in and he said, if you were advising Joe Biden on economic policy, What would you advise him now as to what to say as a candidate? I mean, right now he's basically talking to us from his home. There's no possible way that there can be, you know, get out the vote efforts, rallies, things like that.
Well, there can be certainly get out the vote efforts from remote locations. I think everybody who cares about the future of this country ought to be spending at least a half an hour every day on the telephone with people they know, with relatives, with friends, with organizations, getting out the vote, planning to get out the vote on November 3rd, helping to make sure that there are mail-in ballots, that people actually have the right to vote from wherever they are. There's a lot that can be done. The mere fact we can't do it in person doesn't end our responsibility or constrain us in any way. Joe Biden, I think, I don't know why he has been as quiet as he's been. Maybe he's biding his time. Biden. Maybe he is aware that Donald Trump's poll ratings are dropping like a stone, that Trump is his own worst enemy. Biden doesn't want to give him too much of a target right now. Let him dig his own hole. Let this play out. Every time, you know, Donald Trump mentions hydroxychloroquine, for example, I mean, his polls drop even further. So maybe Joe Biden is just saying, well, he's going to wait for a couple of months. I don't know. I think I would advise him to come out of the gate, whenever he's going to come out of the gate, swinging, talking about making this country responsive to the needs of most people, getting big money out of politics, so that we have a democracy that is working, so that we can get things such as universal health care and at least an unemployment insurance system that works for people and gets people jobs, and a Green New Deal, and a lot of other things that where there's already, and there is already a lot of public backing. But I think after this collective trauma we've been through, there will be even more understanding the need for these things.
We have a caller who has got a question about health care and Biden. Let's go to Kevin in San Francisco. Hi, Kevin. Hi, Kevin. Are you with us? Well, I'll ask Kevin's question. He wanted you to talk about Biden's opposition to Medicare for All and how he wouldn't sign on to it as a senator.
Kevin, I disagree with that position. I don't know where he is right now, but having so many millions of people who've lost their employer-provided health insurance, it would be certainly understandable if he were to say, if Biden were to say publicly, look, my position had been that I was nervous about Medicare for All. It seemed to me too expensive or too this or too that. But I've seen now, and we've all seen, how awful it is when people lose their health care, health insurance, employer-provided health insurance. And given that 6 to 9 to 12 million people are now without it and their families are without it, I've changed my position. I've now experienced, I see why we need some sort of Medicare for All. And I don't want to quibble over the details, but I'm going to be committed to it.
Well, according to the latest reports, there's a piece in The Hill about Biden's public option plan, and it says that it would do far too little to lower high health care costs or lower the number of uninsured. I mean, this is one of the main problems, Professor Reich, is that these premiums just keep going up by the year, really, and by huge percentages, too.
It's absolutely, Rose. And it's not just the premiums. It's also copayments and deductibles.
Right.
Because a lot of people, even though they have health insurance, they face such gigantic copayments and huge deductibles that they just that they're still reluctant to see a doctor, because by the time they, you know, get to the point where their insurance kicks in, they've already spent a fortune. So we've got to deal with these costs. Pharmaceutical costs are a big, big piece of it. The pharmaceutical industry continues to have far too much sway, power in Washington to basically prevent laws that most other industrialized countries have, which regulate drug prices.
Today we're speaking with Robert Reich, professor of public policy at UC Berkeley. He was Secretary of Labor under the Clinton administration. He's the author of 12 books, including The System, Who Rigged It, How We Fix It. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Professor Reich, you supported Bernie Sanders, right?
Yes.
Yes.
I also actually I just to make that absolutely clear, I support Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And it was a little awkward to support both of them, but I actually thought both of them, either of them would make a great president.
And it's been interesting to watch you, Professor Reich, and the issues that you embrace, the things that you talk about. And I just would love to talk to you for a minute about the state of the Democratic Party, specifically the corporate Dems, because when we've talked about this before, but, you know, under Clinton, that's when NAFTA was passed. That really devastated manufacturing. It devastated wages. So many Mexican workers were devastated by that. The crime bill that led to mass incarceration, deregulation, Glass-Steagall with Wall Street. I mean, there were a lot of things that passed under the Clinton administration that are directly connected to where we are today.
Yes, absolutely. And I suffered through. I had a front row seat, and I was at a lot of those tables at rows, and I can tell you how frustrating it was to be part of an administration. I'm proud of certain things we accomplished. I thought, you know, raising the minimum wage and getting family medical leave and doing a lot of things that help working people, all important. But the list you mentioned was very, very troubling to me, and getting rid of welfare and substituting something that was much more draconian, much more difficult for people to utilize. And even today, a lot of people don't get public assistance because of the reforms that Bill Clinton and the Republicans put in place in 1996. So I personally feel very, you know, ambivalent about what was not accomplished and what could have been accomplished. And I had a bit of a front row seat with the Obama administration. And there, too, the first 2 years of the Obama administration, the Democrats had the House and the Senate. Now, granted, we had a national economic emergency in terms of Wall Street blowing up and the financial crisis. But even there, I asked myself, and I still ask myself, given that that the Democrats had the presidency and control of the House and Senate for 2 years, could the Democrats have done more to make sure that homeowners, for example, were not so badly treated and so many people losing their homes and their jobs and their savings in that crisis? Could there not have been more fundamental reform? I think that, again, having been very close to power and served in a cabinet, I can tell you that the Wall Street and corporate Democrats and Republicans, the Wall Street wings of both parties, even though much larger in the Republican Party, in the Democratic Party, it is still a constraint on fundamental reform. The Wall Streeters and the corporate Democrats really don't want the kind of reform that that shifts the locus of power and wealth in this country away from them. And that's a huge problem. That's really the theme of my latest book.
Well, we have time for one more email, Professor Reich. Carla writes, I am from the UK. It's unfathomable to me that the US does not have a safety net, basic health care, clean water, and free education.
Well, Carla, it is unfathomable to most people who are in countries. Most other advanced countries do have some form of universal health care. They also have paid sick leave. I talk to people in other countries, and they're incredulous that the United States doesn't have paid sick leave. We have 12 weeks of unpaid leave if your family desperately needs it or if you get sick. And most workers can't afford 12 weeks of unpaid leave. We don't have the kind of income support that most other countries do, even in this pandemic. Most European countries and other advanced economies provided, maintained payrolls. I mean, they actually paid for people to stay home, in effect. What did we do? Well, we used the banks and we upped unemployment insurance. And now Mitch McConnell is saying he doesn't even want to renew that. We treat our working class, we treat our middle class people, working people in this country, worse than any other advanced country treats its workers. And most people don't know that in this country. Most people take for granted it just has got to be this way.
Well, Professor Reich, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. We would love to have you back to continue these very important discussions.
Well, thank you, Rose.
Thank you. Robert Reich is professor of public policy at UC Berkeley. His latest book is The System, Who Rigged It, How We Fix It. You could find more information at yourcallradio.org. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.